everyone. Hour two, I have a special guest that is also a friend of mine and lives here in Washington. Her name is Galilee Carlisle, and she is an educator. She's a farmer. She's a cool lady. Galilee, are you here?
I can hear you, Jenna, but can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. Galilee, I wanted to have you on air because I was so impressed with an interview we had a couple months ago on a different radio station, and you talk through how you describe to children the tiers of life and how we learn to live and differentiating what the real world offers and the digital realm. And I think it's really important for everyone to hear your take on it and how you present digital dependence and avoiding it.
Okay, that sounds good. Hi, Jenna, and hi, listeners. My name is Galilee Carlisle, and as Jenna said, I'm both a farmer and a teacher, but I want to emphasize that I don't just help children understand tech dependence. I think it's even more important to help adults understand tech dependence and tech addiction, because a lot of the reasons that kids become tech addicted, it's actually not in their nature to become tech addicted. It's contrary to their nature, but a lot of the reasons they become tech addicted is because the parents are unaware and are tech addicted or are offering it as some sort of solution for some other unmet need. So I want to emphasize that I don't just educate kids, and I don't think that kids have the main problem. I think adults actually have the main problem.
Good point.
But, yeah. So should I just start in a little bit about, like, who I am and what I do, or?
Yes, please.
Yeah, okay. So I would say my foothold, my basis is actually in farming. I farm organically on a small scale for the last 25 years, and in farming, it requires awareness, attention, planning, gratitude, lots of gratitude, preservation, awareness of the natural order and following natural order, selflessness, adaptability, resourcefulness. And I also have another equally foothold in teaching middle school, which actually requires much of all the same: awareness, attention, planning, gratitude, the natural order, selflessness, all those things I said. And those qualities that are required for farming and teaching are not compatible with tech dependence. So I have become very careful that my tech use doesn't erode my unique human qualities that I hold dear so that I can be a good middle school teacher and a good farmer. And I pay special attention to all technologies, whatever they may be, a car, a watch, a zipper, a chainsaw, whatever, has amplification reduction characteristics. Any technology will amplify certain qualities in us and will reduce certain qualities in us. And so when we're choosing whether or not to include a technology in our life, it's important for us to look at the amplification reduction characteristics of any technology and decide whether that's something we want to do. And most people, sadly, haven't taken that step of, like, deciding whether or not to include a technology in their life. They've just gone willy-nilly into it without much choice. And so around 2013... I'll backtrack a little bit, but around 2013, I started calling myself Heads Up for Public Health, and I started giving talks at high schools, community colleges, health fairs, stress management classes, family library nights, wherever I could get anywhere to help people sort of step back and take a look at the choices they're making regarding technology and see if it really matched how they wanted to be living, because most people's use patterns are out of alignment with how they want their life to be. And I can't change people, but I can help them see it in another light and look at it another way. And then to backtrack a little bit, like from 2003 to 2007, I really watched even just the flip phone use start to erode people's health, smarts, and joy. And I think that all of our listeners could think back in that time and kind of watch that happen too, like the honeymoon of the convenience of the smartphone or of the cell, of the flip phone got rolled right over into the excitement and novelty of the smartphone in 2007. And then from 2007 on, it just became amplified. And so I, having watched the poison get slipped into the drink, and many of our listeners are the same age as me, over 50, just barely, but, and having watched the same thing happen of watch it get slipped into the drink, so to speak, or the food, and I just feel the need to help people see what happened. So I hope that's a fine starting point.
Absolutely. Because I remember also never before, like you mentioned, that really hit a light. Never before in human history have we gotten dopamine hits from just pushing a button.
Correct.
And that is its own cycle of addiction that can be created through that. And we see that, you know, we see that with, you know, all the kids that are holding these devices, all the people, you know, how many times I'll look at someone and they'd be like, you know, I'm addicted to this. And they keep having to use that camera, use that, look up Wikipedia, blah, 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 blah. And mm-hmm. What's happening in the brain? I recall that conversation that we had had. So I was hoping that you could talk a little bit about the neurology
about the
that's
dopamine,
going on.
About the dopamine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Well,
yeah.
I will talk about that. First of all, I just want to say that my initial interest in helping people understand the dangers of cell phones and smartphones was solidly based in the radiation part, the physical parts of the radiation. That's where it really started from, because I'm like, I am baffled, seriously baffled still to this day, even though I've been studying this for so long, 20 years, why anyone would choose to adopt a technology that physically harms them and their loved ones and the rest of the natural world. Like, why would anybody do that? So I started by educating people about the radiation aspects of the technology, which would be reason enough, as far as I'm concerned, not to adopt any of it. But I didn't get a whole lot of foothold of people being terribly interested in that, which was shocking to me. I mean, I gave presentations to doctors and nutritionists and, you know, parents, grandparents. People weren't terribly interested in the radiation part, which I could talk for 6 hours on. But what started to become more interesting to people, and so I started talking more about that, is just the addiction part and the neurology part and the brain part. People seem a little bit more interested in that part, and it seems to help people wean themselves a little bit from certain technologies to know that stuff more than to know the radiation and the physical part. So far be it for me to understand that, why that is. I would love to know that, and when I find out, I'll let you know.
Good.
Yeah, but what first thing I really like people to think about is this when it comes to the internet, and I'll speak slowly because I think it's so important. Every time any one of us sets foot, and I'm using the word foot loosely, sets foot into the internet, sets finger into the internet, we are opening ourselves up to a unfathomably enormous amount of input, both real and imagined, and the vast majority of that input comes from sources that do not care about our well-being. They only care about capturing our attention for as long as possible. And it's really, really important. So anytime, and I'm a pretty minimal tech user. We don't use cell phones, flip phones, smartphones. We run successful businesses without that. We do use a computer. We have a hardwired computer, no Wi-Fi in our home for lots of reasons I could get into if people were interested. But we use hardwired computers. We share our computers, and we go to them. I'll speak for myself, since I can't speak for my family entirely. But I go to the computer only when I am willing to open myself up to that unfathomably enormous amount of input, both real and imagined. It is a portal into which we are entering, which we are usually not ready to handle. So I'll ask myself, even before I check email, which is quite clean compared to most of the internet, right? Even before I check email, I'll ask myself, am I ready to step into that vast, unfathomable bit amount of input? And if I'm not, I just won't even check it. So it's really important to increase our awareness in terms of our habit and our uses. So who have I worked with mostly? So community colleges, health teachers, like I said, high schoolers. Most recently, I've had the wonderful chance to be the health and English teacher for a small group of middle schoolers for 2 years. And so we've got to spend, you know, a total of probably 20 weeks really inspecting our technology use habits through journaling, reading excerpts from various books. A lot of kids aren't aware that there are like incredible amount of professionals writing about the topics of technology addiction. They think it's just parents going, rah, 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 you know. So sure. I share with them these amazing books. I'll like excerpt out a chapter or two, and we'll read them and analyze them rather than having them read the whole books. And they're just really impressed that all these doctors and psychologists and economists and are writing about this. So we do that, and we have done goal setting and inspecting our habits and sharing and just talking about problems. A lot of people are afraid to talk about problems, but when you're a middle school teacher, you just do it, you know, and it's really, the kids are craving it. They want to talk about it. They want to talk about how their grandma is addicted to Candy Crush and how that makes them sad and why that seems to be, and it's really, really great. So that's been my most recent really happy experience. So when I'm talking with people, here's where I begin. I begin with, why is technology dependence and addiction so likely? Like most people think, oh, I should be worried about whether I'm going to get addicted to cigarettes or crack cocaine or... But really, technology addiction of various sorts is the most likely addiction for anyone at this point. And so we talk about why it's so likely. And so we get into how, well, it's legal. It's almost free. It's very accessible. It's socially acceptable. It's a slippery slope. It's normalized. It's everywhere. It's entertaining. It's personalized and targeted, which is a really big one. And it's designed, with huge effort, it's designed to light up addictive brain patterns. So those are the people like that. None of what I just said is true of any other commonly labeled addiction. So that's unheard of. So we start there and we really pick that apart. And then we start getting into why is that so bad? Like, well, if it's fun and it's personalized and it's legal and it's socially acceptable and it's encouraged and it's everywhere and it's designed for me, like, why is that so bad? That sounds like a utopia, right? Like, it's cool. I can learn a lot, and I can get everything I need, and it's free. And why is that so bad? Well, most people, when I come up with this conversation, I don't even have to, like, lead this part. They will start to tell me, well, it keeps you from doing your laundry and cleaning the house and doing your homework, and it keeps you from going outside, and it keeps you from sleeping, and it keeps you from real life, face-to-face, neighborly connections, and it keeps you from being motivated. And so a lot of people will come up with those things right away, and then we get into a little bit deeper. It also keeps people from having time to think for themselves. And time to think for yourself is like this precious gem that is neglected in most people's worlds, and seriously neglected in the tech-saturated norm. And so the time to think is actually really crucial to all of our developmental processes for adults and children alike. And also, tech dependency keeps us from sensory-rich activities, from things that are messy and time-consuming, because it's so much easier to just browse the internet than to do something that's really like a big project that takes up a lot of room and takes up a lot of time and might go wrong, and you might have to bring some friends over to help. And all these things, these sensory-rich activities, are crucial to our happiness and our health. So that's where we go next. I feel like you might have some questions, so maybe I should stop there for a little bit. But
well, I love where you're going with this, and it looks like the chat room is taking it in, and I want you to keep going with this because it's true.
Okay.
It's like, yeah. I really want to hear how you present this and the reception that you get from your groups. Yeah.
Yeah. So then what I go into next, so we go with the why is it so likely, and then what's wrong with that, and then I go into, and it's not just me talking. I know right now it's me talking, but if I'm working with a group, especially a small group, and especially middle schoolers, which has been my most recent big plunge, it's really drawing out of them. But we talk about the psychology concept of needs. So tier one needs and tier two needs. So tier one needs, everybody's pretty much aware of most of them, food, water, and air. However, people sometimes don't recognize sleep and shelter. So food, water, air, sleep, and shelter are the tier one needs. Those are the things that we can go very little time without. And those are ones that people focus on when they focus on general needs. And then there are what are called tier two needs. These are also crucial to health, but you can physically survive for a very, very long time without them. And it's unfortunate that we can. I think it would be better if there was a little bit more of a feedback loop. But anyways, the tier two needs are super crucial to full, happy, healthy life. And they are, I'll go slow in case people feel like taking notes. Most people probably are aware of most of this, but tier two needs are connection and belonging, purpose and meaning, safety, which is close to shelter, which is a tier one need, but love and intimacy, entertainment / pleasure, movement, challenge and success, and a feeling of self-worth. So these are the tier two needs that actually most of our life, we are actually focused on getting those tier two needs met in the first world anyways. Because we have the luxury, I guess, of having generally tier one needs are met without thinking too much about it. Maybe not very well. Some people have bad food and bad air and bad sleep and bad water. But so these tier two needs, we all need them. And we get them met in some very clear and obvious and healthy ways, and we get them met in some very strange, distorted ways. And technology, as it exists via the internet at this time, has allowed, for the first time ever in massive human history, to get those two tier two needs met with very little, or to get people thinking that they've met those needs, but not actually getting those needs met. So people might go to play some certain kinds of games on the internet to meet the need for challenge. People might look at pictures on Pinterest to meet the need for beauty and entertainment and pleasure. People might connect with people on Facebook for the need, for the tier two need of connection. People might want to level up in a game or get a lot of likes or get a lot of retweets for a feeling of value and self-worth. So what it turns out happening is that people are, they think they're getting their needs met through all these very, very sophisticated, personalized ways, but the reality is they're not getting their needs met, and it has to do with brain neurology and the dopamine stuff, which I will definitely talk about at maybe after one of the breaks. Are we getting close to a break? Should I find a stopping point here? Hello? Hello? I can't hear you.
I'm sorry, I was muted.
Nope.
I am sorry about that.
Okay.
I was muted. I was typing away. I think there is a break coming up, but please keep going until you hear the music.
Oh, okay. Okay. So then once we talk about tier two needs, which is actually usually with any group is a fascinating conversation. So then I start talking about, technology, people are trying to get their needs met, like hungrily trying to get their needs met in all these ways that are being offered through technology, but they're feeling unsatisfied. And so then I start talking about what I have come to term the double whammy of tech dependency. And the double whammy is a full-on assault on our ability to get our needs met. And so in a double whammy, I've never boxed, but I've been told that a double whammy is when you get punched on one side and then immediately punched on the other side, so your face kind of goes whacka, 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 whacka both ways. So that's why I call it the double whammy, because the punch number one is from one side is what I call duped. And punch number one is that the digital world is full of counterfeit, hollow, and fake ways to make you feel like you've got your needs met. So I like to associate it with junk food. Junk food is readily available, fairly cheap, super tasty. You can eat it for a long time, but eventually you're going to have to pay the price. So that's the duped part. You think it's food, but it's not. And so all these online shopping, social media, endless entertainment, games, it's practically free, it's socially acceptable, it's personalized, it's got all these hooks built into it. If that's punch number one, you're duped into thinking you've got your needs met. You're feeling connection and belonging and intimacy and entertainment and not movement, which is a crucial one, challenge and value. However, here's punch number two, which comes from the other side. And punch number two, I call disabled. So these tech use habits fill up our time, and they weaken our bodies and minds and ambition. Thus, we are unable then to truly get our needs met. So the kinds of things that would truly meet our needs, these face-to-face, messy, hands-on, physical, complicated interactions, spontaneous interactions that are organically coming out of meeting other people or getting outside or moving or really taking on an actual challenge in the community or anything that would be more organic, and I don't use that in the farming term, but So not only on one side have we been fooled to thinking we're getting our needs met with these counterfeit forms of entertainment and such, then it's filled up our time, so then we are less able, we are disabled and less able to do the things that would truly get our needs met. So therefore, we have abused our dopamine patterns, which I'm going to get into, and it's time-consuming, it's sedentary, it's sloppy, it's impatient, it's selfish, and it makes it harder to do things with other people and take on long-term projects, the kinds of things that would really make us feel good. Also, doesn't give us time to think, so then we lack in self-awareness, and that makes it even harder to get our needs met. And the result of this double whammy, punch number one from one side, punch number duped, punch number two from the other side, disabled, result is then we are really not getting our needs met. So, right. And what happens when people don't get their needs met? Anxiety, depression, mental instability, lack of follow-through, further addictions, difficulty communicating. We're seeing this in our friends and in our loved ones. And I'm not saying the world was perfect before the internet. Don't get me wrong. Okay? But we have choices to make. How deep do we want to go into this? How much are we giving up of ourselves? And how much are we looking to the internet to feed us in ways that cannot be done via the internet? Like, just like the junk food. You can eat all the tasty Doritos and gummy worms you want till your tongue goes raw, and it is not going to give your cells the nourishment that they need. It's the same with the internet. It's like we can understand that with food. Why can't we understand that with the internet? Maybe that's a good... Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can.
Yeah, and you, okay.
Yes. There was a question in the chat if they should re-listen or if you did have a website where you have all of this information collected. And I didn't think you had a website, but I've been taking notes and typing things in.
Do any listeners want to guess whether Galilee Carlisle, heads up for public health, has a website or not? Galilee would like to spend as little time on the internet as possible, so therefore
right.
does not have a website.
Right.
However, I feel better, and my friends like me better when I spend as little time as possible on the internet. So, therefore, there is no website for us. I do use email. I do talk on the telephone. We do have a small campground on our farm where people can come and camp, and that is... People find us on the internet, but we do not host that. It's Lost Valley Farm Camp. And people do come camp here, and often and sometimes we do end up talking about technology and technology addiction while we're here. And that's one of the things I offer to campers is a media wellness coaching session.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
It is such a beautiful setting. I did visit, and I spent the night, I sure did. It's beautiful.
I should tell you today, Jenna, we have a group of 20 people here, 10 adults and 10 children, and they have kept the sauna going all, Brian would be happy to hear, they have kept the sauna going all day long, and they have been in and out of the sauna, and the kids are on the pirate ship as I speak, playing, and it's so cute to watch them navigating, lifting up the anchor, which is incredibly difficult to do, and these are little kids, so it's really cool to watch them figuring that out.
Oh, that's so great. Wow. That's medicine.
It is,
well,
indeed.
Now I hear the music now. So we're coming up to a break. 4 minutes. We'll be right back.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk. Real people. Because you can handle the truth.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company? And it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks.
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
With hundreds of pictures of your farm camp. And
over 100, yeah.
Yeah, looks great. I did get a question from the peanut gallery here. The Evergreen State College is where you attended, and your master's degree program, if you would talk through your experience, I think it's worth talking about. Because it's related.
I bet I know who asked this question. I don't really like to admit that I went to the Evergreen State College because I don't like the place, but I did, and I liked it for a little while I was there. My master's thesis was questioning the appropriateness of computers. Okay, so this was 1993, just to frame it a little bit, when a lot of schools were losing funding and computer computer companies were offering a lot of resources to classrooms to make up for that funding in exchange for having teachers utilize some of their software and show some of their shows and stuff like that. So anyways, I was questioning the appropriateness on a spiritual, educational, physical, and social level of computers in the classroom. And my thesis advisors made it quite difficult for me, and in the long run, I was left 2 credits short of my actual master's because of that. And however, about, I continued to teach full time after that, very, very happily and very successfully. And about 12, 15 years after that, the same college hired me back to teach agriculture. So I think that's the story that the listener was getting at. So things don't always go the way you think.
Right, right. But the your final thesis or your the final paper that I think that you saw this already coming.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, I saw that computers in the classroom were not going to be a sustainable in terms of human development was not going to be a sustainable way to go. And I was writing about it. I mean, and in a master's thesis, you have to research what other experts are saying. You have to do some of your own sort of surveys and analyses, and I did all that. And it's just that my my advisors kind of thrashed me around so that it made it hard for me to finish.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I should talk about the dopamine part because I touched on that a bunch of times in the earlier section. So we have, you know, whatever, 8 minutes in this little section. Would that be good?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
So unless there's any other questions.
In the chat room?
Or
no, that would be great.
No. Okay. So dopamine, as most people understand, is a chemical that is produced predominantly in the brain, but not actually only in the brain. There are other places in the body where dopamine is produced in smaller amounts, and it is released as a positive feedback loop when something goes well to make us want to do it again. Generally speaking, it also is reduced just to relax us. And however, throughout the course of human history, dopamine has always followed effort. So Jenna's heard me say a little of this before, but you rehearse and rehearse and rehearse and rehearse and rehearse for a big show, and it goes amazing, and you get a standing ovation, dopamine, right? You wait and wait and wait and wait for your best friend to come after many, many letters exchanged, and finally best friend is at the door and you hug, dopamine, right? You hike up to the top and you see the view you were hoping for, dopamine flush. Those all require effort, right? So lots of effort leads up to dopamine. Now we are at a time when people can get dopamine released into their body with a barely a click and a swipe and a tap. And this has never happened before. And the brain finds it quite an assault. And I'm going to go back to why that is. So there's the forebrain and the rear brain. The forebrain is what is required for reasoning and logic, long-term planning, follow-through, patience, impulse control, all of the things we consider civilized, evolved, modern behavior. And the rear of the brain is also crucially important. Sometimes the rear brain gets a bad rap, and I like to give the rear brain a nice good old pat on the rear brain, because the rear brain is important. It's what helps us in emergencies. It what helps us when we're supposedly when we're under huge duress, but it's only supposed to be utilized briefly for a short amount of time to get out of the emergency. So some people describe it as the house is on fire, grab the baby, let's get out of here. Okay?
Yeah.
So what, and mostly we want to spend most of our time utilizing the forebrain in our modern life. And we want to have the rear brain accessible when there's something crucial and we need to deal with it right away. But we don't want to be operating in the rear brain most of the time, because the rear brain is necessarily and appropriately selfish, impatient, not very far thinking, get the baby, house is on fire, get out of here, right? Okay, so that's appropriate in an emergency, but it is not appropriate most of the time. So linking back to the dopamine thing, when we have these massive amounts of dopamine being dumped into our system through these pleasurable, personalized, addictive behavior, highly available technologies that we have now, without any effort, the brain thinks there's an emergency. The brain is confused. The brain has never had to deal with this before, and it goes into this weird cyclical shutdown of the forebrain into the rear brain. So we're operating with our rear brain as if there's an emergency, but there isn't one. And it's so confusing to the forebrain, because there's not an emergency, but the body feels like one, because dopamine is supposed to come along with other hormones that come along from effort. Because when you hike a mountain, there's other hormones that get introduced in that mix with the dopamine and doesn't confuse the brain. And also, people don't usually get dopamine hit after hit after hit after hit after hit after hit. It's usually fewer and farther between, which is how we have evolved to process and enjoy that hormone. And also, there's a whole issue of some people being born with low dopamine receptors. That's a whole other topic, which some of the authors do a really good job at explaining. There's Nicholas Cardaris is a really good one. He wrote a book called Glow Kids. The doctor wrote an amazing book that talks about low dopamine, people with low dopamine receptors, and how much more predominant that has gotten and how that is affecting this whole addiction pathway. But what I like people to think about when we're in just a regular setting, because I'm not a doctor, is to have people think about, what am I doing to my brain if I'm giving it this pleasure, these false sense of pleasure and belonging and intimacy and beauty and entertainment, these like kind of counterfeit fake versions, hollow bunny versions, what am I doing to my brain that is so unsatisfying? Then there's sort of a whole body-wide response to that lack of satisfaction. And yet, as I talked about in the double whammy, we are less able to truly to go out and get our needs met. So when we get into our next section, I will talk about some ways we can retrain ourselves. Because it's there's no point in wah-wah-wah without some solutions, as we all know. So I like to give people some great solutions increase our self-awareness. That's the most thing that I can do, you know, is just to help people get a little more self-aware. And the reason for doing it for me is I'm probably going to be alive another 30 or 40 years. And I want some people who are self-aware out there, and some people who are who are living a sensory-rich life and who are taking care of themselves. I don't want to be in a sea of zombies. And I don't think there might be half a sea of zombies, but I'd like to increase awareness. And so all I can get is to help people, like, kind of look into themselves and what am I doing? You know, what am I doing? And sort of retrain ourselves, so...
Agreed. I do also want to put out the call line number if anyone wants to call in to ask questions or add to the discussion.
Or correct me on anything I said.
Yeah, sure. I doubt they will. 512-248-8252. That's 512-248-8252. If anyone wants to call in, please do. And it seems like maybe Sam's skipping a break. So how about we just get on to solutions? And if the music does start up, we'll just take a break.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Okay, well, some ways it's easy to go down the tech dependency rabbit hole. I haven't done it myself, but I've certainly watched so many people do it, and it's because of all those things where it's, you know, legal and safe, and well, not safe, but like legal and encouraged and all that. It's hard to notice when your own self is going down it. So, but if you have taken a step back and you do realize that possibly you have a problem, here are some things that I like to recommend. So one is retraining your friends and family. Because a lot of people are tech dependent because their friends and family expect them to be available all the time or to constantly respond to messages or to send a picture of every little thing that happens. That kind of culture, family and friend culture that we create around that. So there's a retraining process you can go through where you tell your friends and family, hey, I'm going to cut back a little bit on my tech use, and so don't expect to hear from me and just try and start with doubling whatever the normal amount that you normally respond. So for me, my friends know that I'm a pretty much 24-hour turnaround on an email, for example. So nobody's going to expect me to respond to an email right away. But my friends, if I didn't respond to an email for a week, they would probably be concerned with me. So you just want to double whatever you, like if you normally respond to a text in 1 hour, tell them you're going to do 2 hours, and then keep doubling that until you get to something more reasonable. So we don't text in our family, so we don't have that problem. But like answering machine messages, I try and respond to them within 3 hours, and I'm fine with that. But it requires a little retraining, and tell them why. Tell your friends and family, it's not because I don't love you or because I don't care about you. It's because I want to become more healthy and more happy and less tech dependent. And then I'm going to be a better friend to you and a better daughter and a better husband and a better whatever you are to somebody else. So to frame it in that way, I want to be a better person, and this is what I'm doing. And I'm retraining everyone to not expect me to respond or send a picture immediately. And it doesn't mean because I don't have anything to share or don't have anything to say or don't love you or don't care about you. It's because I'm taking care of myself so that I can be available to you in a more pure way. So that's one thing I love.
Okay, yeah. Oh, can I interrupt? Because I know you're going on to another one. We have two callers.
Okay.
And I want to pull up the first caller. It's Alan in Texas.
Okay.
And can we take that call, Sam?
Yes, I am here, Jenna. And thank you for this guest and your previous guest. I would ask your guest right now. I would ask her to marry me, but I would be like marrying myself. Thank you, my
friend. I'm already married.
thank you.
Thank you
for presenting. I'm actually going to take over the show. I'm doing Dave Kopeck's show after this. And believe it or not, this is what I was wanting to talk about. If you're mainlining heroin and everyone else around you is mainlining heroin, you're not considered an addict, are you? No, this digital mesmerization has destroyed this world. I've never had an IP address, never had a smartphone. I had a cell phone for a short time. Did not like it. You know, I have sat here and watched the world change around me in not a good way. It's very convenient, yes, but mesmerizing and turning people into not people anymore, it's really amazed me. I just wanted to call up and say thank you. Makes me feel not so alone out there in this world. And with that, I will jump off and... we'll be talking about this not only tonight, but I'm also on tomorrow morning, and we're going to continue this on because this is what I'm trying to make people aware of: the mesmerization, the learning, you're a digital zombie. You know, a vast majority people can use it right, like you say. You know, I've never had an internet, an IP address, anything else. I've seen what it's done to society around me. Thank you, ladies. I love you, both of y'all. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we can take a second caller, or you can go on to another solution. It's up to you, Galilee.
No, go ahead and go call.
Okay, Andy in Texas.
Hey, ladies, you there?
Yes.
Yeah, hello, Andy. Yeah.
Hey, well, hey, check this out. Andy just listened to Alan, had no idea he was going to call. I'm going to co-host his show with him in the next two hours after this show. And I just wanted to call up and let people know that we were going to talk more about this. And there's nothing better for Alan is going to have a really new perspective on this because he is a low-tech guy. I mean, he does have a satellite, and that's where he gets. And he gets the satellite that doesn't give you everything. He has a satellite. It's Global Star. And he's just a low-tech guy, but he knows so much. And so it's imperative, and it's really great because you guys are segueing into what he wanted to talk about tonight anyway. So, and that's basically all I want to say, other than the fact that you guys are straight up on the point, and we didn't know that at the beginning of this cell phone stuff and all this high-tech stuff with the computer, we didn't know it was a weapon. We thought it was something that was, we were just growing with the nature as we progress and stuff, and it wasn't. It was always meant to be a weapon. I'll let you go with that because the show's
getting
close.
You're right about that. You're right about that.
Yep. Y'all have a good night.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
You too. All right. Galilee, what else can we do? What else do you have on the list?
Should I go on to another one and not, you're not doing a break?
Well... Usually, I thought there would be, maybe Sam's just skipping because you're such a wonderful guest. So let's just keep going.
Okay. Another thing that I like to encourage people to do is to create a lovely reference library in their house. Most people have gotten rid of thesaurus, dictionary, atlas, cookbooks. Insect books, mineral books. If you go to any used bookstore, there are so many books in the reference section, or anybody's house, you know, who has too many books, then you can have this vast array of reference books, which are history books, and lots of maps are really great to have around, and star charts and things, so that instead of going to the internet for things, that you can open up your books and have a more hands-on, friendly, non-internet-dependent way of finding the things that we want to know. And it is natural, humanly natural, to be curious and to want to know things. There is nothing wrong with that. However, going to the internet for things that would be better resourced by looking in a book or in an atlas or in a thesaurus or some, you know, nature guide or whatever, it is more satisfying to look it up that way, and it's not so hard on the eyes, it's not so hard on the electrical grid, and it's not internet dependent. And then as a further step from that, I like to practice what I call oogling instead of googling. So I'm pretty allergic to Google. I am very, very unlikely to look up anything on Google. What I like to do is think about, is the thing that I'm wondering about, did it exist before the internet or not? And if it existed before the internet, I will never look to the internet for the solution. So say, castrating a pig. Did castrating a pig exist before the internet? Well, most definitely. So am I going to look on the internet how to castrate a pig? No. I am going to go to as many neighbors as I can find, to the vet, to the farm store, in as many books as I can find, and I'm going to learn how to castrate a pig. Okay? That's one example. However, if the question is how to use Instagram on your Mac computer instead of on a smartphone, that did not exist before the internet, so I would Google that. How should I use Instagram on a Mac computer? Okay? So, like, do not Google how to fry an egg. People, please, please do not Google how to fry an egg. Do not Google how to fix a 1953 clutch. Go talk to your neighbors. It might take more time. it might be more frustrating. But that is what we're made for. We're made for things that are complicated, social, messy, spontaneous. We're not made for convenience. Convenience doesn't suit us well in the long run. It doesn't give us what we need. And we keep dipping into the internet to try and get our needs met, and it's not working. So try not to be, have a Google-free month or something like that. Just every time you're going to look, every time you think about looking something up on the internet, wait a week and see if in that week, most likely people, you will discover that either one, didn't really matter, or two, you found out from somebody else. You went to a store and you talked to a stranger, and lo and behold, they knew the answer. And it was more fun. It's more stimulating to talk to. I don't order things online ever. I will call a 1-800 number and place an order on the phone because I like to talk to a real person. And it's so much more fun that way. And so,
I agree.
That's, we want to talk to each other.
Right.
There's an element of wondering. Wondering is so important. And I'm glad you brought that up because wonder, I think you and I have talked about this at some point. So wondering is underestimated. It is much more important to wonder than it is to have the answer most of the time. 90% of the time, I would say, and this is not scientific, but I would say it's more important to wonder than to have the answer. Jenna, did I one time tell you the story about the family on the train?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, should I tell that real quick?
Yeah, do it, do it.
Yeah. So I was on a train and I was overhearing this dad and two kids about 11 and 9 or something. Well, the dad wasn't there. The two kids, he had gone to the whatever, to another car to get something. And the two kids were talking about wondering, they were wondering whether or not there's gravity on the sun. And they were having this just like raucously curious and hilarious, beautiful conversation about whether there's gravity on the sun. And they were talking for a long time. They were a couple seats in front of me. And dad came back and he said, what are you talking about? And they're like, well, we're wondering if there's gravity on the sun. Lo and behold, he pulls out his God stick. That's what I call the smartphone. And is there gravity on the sun? The answer was yes or no, whichever it was. I can't remember. And conversation was over. The conversation was over.
Right.
And that is sad. Because all of a sudden they knew the answer and the wondering was gone. And the wondering is more important. It's part of that self-awareness thing. I hear some music. I will pause.
I think this is the end of the show.
Oh, are we to the end?
We are. It is. It's the music, but we can still keep talking until they cut us off. So, Galilee, this has been really insightful. I'm so glad that you came on. Someone in the chat just wrote, false knowledge on the interwebs anyway. So I really like that we're leaving the show with wondering. Do you have any last words?
Oh, that's a fine place. There's lots and lots more, but that's a fine place to leave it.
Okay. Thanks so much, Galilee. You're wonderful.
You're wonderful, too. Talk again soon.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.
Mr. Pop,